Good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Glad you could make it. If you are not watching the activity coming from the bottom of that well shaft, we have a link at MikeMalloy.com where you can watch it. We've been watching it this evening. And it looks pretty scary. What we're supposed to be seeing here is this effort to stop this. And what is bubbling out of here now, or gushing out of here, there are now three holes. I guess there always were three holes. Who knows? But BP won't confirm if that's mud or oil. It doesn't look like oil, does it? It looks like mud. But if you haven't been watching this and you can't find a link, go to our website, MikeMalloy.com, and there's a live link there where you can watch this disaster. There are a couple other things I wanted to touch on tonight, and then we'll have to get back to the disaster in the Gulf. First of all, Art Linkletter, and I know about his political points of view on certain things. I understand. But he was certainly an iconic figure in American television. And the irony is, of course, he was Canadian. He died today at the age of 97. And I think one of the best programs ever on television was The Old Kids Say the Darndest Things. If you're over a certain age, you remember that program. So just to note the passing of Art Linkletter, 97. Wow. Remember Rick Perry, Rick Goodhair Perry, the governor of Texas, back when the economic recovery package, you know, the stimulus was being debated. There are a bunch of these half-witted Republican governors who got all the headlines they could possibly get by rejecting various portions of the funding. And one of the loudest critics of all this was Rick Perry, Republican of Texas, the one that Molly Ivins used to call Rick Goodhair Perry. Anyway, according to, where am I getting this from? Is this Fire Dog Lake or is this Crooks and Liars? I don't know. Anyway, whoever posted this today, thanks. Anyway, at the time, Perry said rejecting the money, quote, "It's pretty simple for us. We can take care of ourselves." That's what he said. He also said, quote, "I'm so concerned about the belief that has gained a foothold in our national consciousness that the best and only way to solve our nation's problems is to drown them with taxpayer dollars," end quote. Perry also said, with regard to the stimulus, that Texas should look a gift horse in the mouth this time. Well, the Texas state legislature eventually pushed Perry to accept the money. See, that didn't get as much attention on the psychopathic teabagger sites, did it? Or the suicider on Fox television didn't talk about it either. But even in his official acceptance letter, you know, when this halfwit writes to Washington, okay, we'll take the money, Perry wrote that, quote, "I believe there are better ways to reinvigorate our economy, and I believe this will burden future generations with unprecedented levels of debt," end quote. Now, you know, Perry wasn't talking that talk when George W. Bush, one of the first acts in office was to destroy the budget surpluses that would have come as a result of the Clinton economic stimulus plans and tax rates on the wealthy. Bush ended that. Bush got us into two wars with no funding, nothing to pay for it except to borrow. You know, Rick Goodhair, Perry, and the rest of these right-wing bastards never talk about that. You see, it's all Obama? Give me a break. Skanks, you fork-tongued idiots. Anyway, as the Wall Street Journal noted this morning, the stimulus is the reason that Texas currently has a balanced budget. This is what the Wall Street Journal said. The economic downturn is catching up with Texas. Sales tax revenue started falling in February 2009 and only started to recover a bit in April of this year. Although Mr. Perry has railed against the federal economic stimulus program, billions of dollars from that initiative helped Texas legislators balance the current budget. That's according to the Wall Street Journal. Now, Texas faces an additional $18 billion shortfall in its next two-year budget, which amounts to 20% of the total of that state's budget. And Perry's refusal to consider tax increases is setting the state up for some cuts in spending that just defy rational thought. A senior budget analyst at the Center for Public Policy Priorities said, quote, there's no way that Texas will be able to come up with $18 billion in cuts. They would have to shut down the prison system. End quote. Jesus. Now, Perry, of course, not the only governor to get his bloomers in a wad about the stimulus while relying on it to balance his budget. Governor Tim Pawlenty, Republican of Minnesota, called the stimulus incoherent and largely wasted, but still used it to fix a third of his state's budget hole. Don't you just love these hypocritical little bastards? Don't you just love them? I mean, they talk one thing for public consumption. Meanwhile, they get together with their budget people in the state legislature and say, well, let's go ahead and take the money anyway. But Jesus Christ, don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody. We got to get out there and talk to the terminally brain dead and tell them, oh, we don't want the stimulus money. It's incoherent, largely wasted. But give me some. Give me some. I can't manage my state anymore. Neither can my half-assed legislature. So come on, America. Give me some. Give me some. We're just kidding about the secession until we're in the black. Once we're in the black, then we'll start talking about it again. But in the meantime, give me some, you socialist bastards. Right? Isn't that socialism? Why in the hell? I live in Georgia. Why should I have to pay anything for you creepoids in Texas, or you freaks in Minnesota, or you halfwits in New York, or you dumbasses in South Carolina? You get my point? You get my point? Was it Ben Franklin that said, who was it that said, we got to hang together or we'll all hang separately? You know, I detest right-wingers, right-wing politicians, Republicans, just as deeply and as abidingly as humanly possible. And I hate them for their cowardice, their hypocrisy, and their deception. Every single one of them. Especially, I guess, their hypocrisy. God, what a bunch of skunks. According to the latest report from the Congressional Budget Office, the stimulus not only helped states stave off budget cuts, but also raised gross domestic product by between 1.4 and 4 percentage points, lowered the unemployment rate by 1.5 percentage points, the points, and created 2.8 million jobs. This is up to 500,000 more jobs than projected. And the Congressional Budget Office estimates that the stimulus will be responsible for up to 3.7 million jobs by September. So as much as I say shelve the whole thing and switch to democratic socialism or social democracy, you can't deny when something has worked to any degree. So Rick Perry and Tim Pawlenty, kiss my grits, you hypocritical little punks, both of you. And by the way, when are you going to pay my ass back, huh? When are you going to pay me back? I gave you my money. Me. The Democratic Socialists, while you pig-squealing right-wing capitalists, you take my money. My money! That's what they sound like. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 21 past the hour. Before we leave, Rick Goodhair Perry, remember Ron writes in, hey Malloy, several years ago, wasn't Perry caught in bed with one of his male subordinates? I think it was the Texas lieutenant governor, come to think of it. Why is it I haven't heard anything about that in years? Well, I don't know why. But yeah, his wife threatened to leave him, and Rick was caught with Jeffrey Connor, who was the Secretary of State, and that's what the story was. The rumor, and that's all it was rumors, was that his wife had moved out of the governor's mansion in Austin, and the alleged reason was that she found the governor in bed with another man. The rumors were out there for a long time, and then they just disappeared, which is a clear indication that either they were false or Perry made sure that they were killed. So, issues about someone's closeted sexual behavior are never really that appealing to me unless they are somebody who categorically states their opposition to homosexuality in any on any level, whether it's gay marriage or gays in the ministry or gays in the military or whatever the issue is, when they're very outspoken about that, and then it turns out that they themselves are projecting their own self-loathing because they don't have the courage to just come out and say, yeah, I'm gay. It's none of your goddamn business, but I am. So what? But that's not what happens in this country. You see, we have this. This twisted attitude about sexuality, about sex in general, but and you know, we can thank our religious forebears for that, right? But we have this twisted consciousness about sex to begin with. But same sex involvement, and the reason I think is because we are probably one of the few societies who can't deal with. There's some in Central Africa, too, where they talk about killing them. Oh, that's right. The Muslims don't like it either. But we're one of the few big-ass societies that can't deal with the fact that each one of us in our hearts of heart of hearts knows pretty well, if we're honest with ourselves, under the right circumstances, I don't know, maybe I'd do that. You know, and that freaks Americans out for some reason. I don't know why. I have no idea why. But anyway, Rick Goodhair Perry, yes, he was, there's a lot of stories that came up about that, and then they just disappeared. bottom line, who gives a damn? Unless, you know, unless he is a real bastard where it concerns gay issues or issues that affect to a greater degree than non-gay people, gay people. I'll figure that sentence out. You know what I'm talking about. As far as somebody's sexual orientation, you know, nobody ever comes up to me and says, "Hi, Mike, are you heterosexual?" "Hey, Mike, are you, you're not gay, are you?" Except Kathy. Kathy thought I was gay for the longest time. You know. And that's okay.
Hey, I was certainly not alone in that assumption, Mr. My partner and I were at the park the other day. My partner and I fixed some salmon for dinner.
Oh, you are so caught in stereotypes, aren't you, sweetheart? Huh? You are just, you know, stereotypes. Somebody says partner and, well, he must be gay.
And the way you went off on that WSB advertiser and their commercial for the pansy truck.
Oh yeah, that cost me, almost cost me my job.
Well, it did eventually.
Oh yeah, it did eventually. But who was it? What was the car company that was running those ads?
Was it Dodge?
No, it was one of the foreign car manufacturers.
Mazda?
I think it was Mazda.
Don't you buy no pansy truck.
Yeah, they had that commercial that ran in the Southeast. It was designed for the Southeast only. They didn't run it in New York or L.A. or Seattle. But down here, they had this commercial said, "Don't you buy no pansy truck." And, I, of course, I went ballistic and went on the air and ripped them to pieces. And next day I got called into the boss's office, and the account executive was sitting there and said, "You realize you just cost me $56,000. And my answer was, "What the hell are you running something like that for? I mean, you know, why? What's the point? We don't want to drive no Negro truck. We don't want to drive no Jew truck." Would that have worked for you, boys?
I thought you were gay. I just knew it.
I may be. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Get him up against the wall. And that one looks Jewish. And that one's cool. Whoever is my friend, into the room. There's one smoking in joint. And another in spots. And I had my way. Good luck to you.
Truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is about 25 before the hour. From Prairie 2, our economic affairs correspondent. Go to his website anytime you like, prairienumeral2.com, prairie2.com. The subject tonight is the Canned Goods School of Economics. Bruce writes, an opinion columnist writing for MarketWatch, a sister publication to Rupert Murdoch's right-wing Wall Street Journal, confirmed that the rumors are true. The investment bankers are telling their big-money clients to sell all their stocks, buy a farm in the country, and stock up on plenty of canned goods. They are predicting that by the end of the year, this year, the Great Depression II will be in full swing. You won't recognize the country, and no matter who wins the election in the fall, there is no fixing the system. Paul Farrell, who wrote the column and quotes investment bankers he knows from his trading days at Morgan Stanley, has doctorates in psychology and law and writes on behavioral economics. He makes a perfectly logical argument that history is repeating itself yet again, as it has over the last 800 years. Although I suspect he is a recent convert to the canned goods school of economics. Behavioral economists have been warning Ever since the Ayn Rand devotees at the Chicago School of Economics came into vogue under Reagan, that the crash was coming. Their only misreading of the situation was underestimating Alan Greenspan's ability to create bubble after bubble, sucking more and more wealth out of the middle class and making investment bankers like Paul Farrell rich. It would be easy to assume that the only reason a Rupert Murdoch publication would be telling such a truth would be to sway the election in their favor. But maybe they're simply trying to build some credibility with the villagers before they come to visit the castle with the torches. As in, hey, we didn't create the monster that destroyed your village, it was the other guys. Is a crash coming? Of course it is. Is it coming right now? Maybe. Banking and corporate finance could freeze up again very quickly since nobody has any real confidence in the system. It wouldn't be a good idea for Obama to go around saying, the fundamentals of the economy are strong, like McCain did. Obama's contention that the financial reform bill, now working its way through the legislative process, is good legislation, is about as dumb. FDR resisted calls to declare martial law and pushed reform instead, but things move much faster now. You can't wait to buy canned goods until the president declares an emergency. Prairie 2. Bruce Enberg. Go to his website, prairienumeral2.com, where you will find a whole list of blogatorials that will just make you buy canned goods. And another thing that I wanted to touch on before we move to your phone calls and the horror that's unfolding in the Gulf, even as we speak, is long-term unemployed and the chance to get Congress to extend benefits. Looks like it's not going to happen. David Shep, writing at DailyFinance.com, lays out the situation. The lawmakers this week are debating whether to further extend benefits to long-term unemployed Americans. And much like any legislation trying to get its way through Congress right now, the division over the bill's contents fall along ideological lines. Liberal members, or more liberal members, Democrats, want to bolster the nation's safety net and establish job programs. Gee, what a terrible idea. While these freaking lousy rat-ass conservatives fret about adding a projected $123 billion to the nation's ever-growing debt. Oh, let's not do that! The bill currently making its way through Congress is titled American Jobs and Closing Loopholes Act. Who comes up with this? Who comes up with these names? Anyway, it provides for $47 billion for unemployment benefits, extended. Jobless workers in some states are currently eligible for up to 99 weeks of unemployment benefits. The bill would extend those benefits for the rest of the year, helping to keep money flowing into the wallets of as many as 5 million Americans who are otherwise going to see their benefits disappear starting June 2nd. That's next week. But this bill won't extend a lifeline to those who have or soon will cross the 99-week threshold. There's no proposal to give such workers additional benefits. Of course not, because this is a filthy, encrusted, disgusting capitalist society where the most expendable part of the financial structure is the worker. Kick him to the curb. Tell her to take off. Leadership in both houses is trying to get a vote before these pigs adjourn for Memorial Day recess. The House could have voted on the bill as soon as today. The Senate is expected to take up the measure on Friday. I'm sure the House is delayed because of their arcane rules that allow these pigs, Republicans, to stop everything. Same in the Senate. Steny Hoyer, the House Democratic leader, said, I think we'll have the votes. And when he was pressed to clarify that, he said, all right, we'll have the votes. Oh, yeah? Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid has threatened to hold that chamber in session through the weekend to ensure the bill passes before the week-long break. Reid, at a news conference, said, we must pass the jobs bill this week in the next few days. Now, well, the bill would also extend eligibility for laid-off workers to receive a subsidy to help pay to maintain employer-sponsored health plans through the federal COBRA program. The subsidy covers the cost of 65% of the premium of laid-off workers for up to 15 months. I guess that's 15 additional months, because COBRA typically runs out after 18 months. So I guess that's a 15-month extension. A chunk of the bill's funds, $89 billion, goes to extend current payment rates to doctors under Medicare and Medicaid through the end of the year. Without that funding, health providers would see those payments cut by 21%. And it just goes on and on and on. So count on the Republicans. And you know, I would hope that the teabag morons are aware, especially these arrogant, white, middle-aged, and up teabaggers who are already sucking at the federal nipple while they get out there and say, keep the government's hands off my Medicare. I hope they understand what's coming, and it'll be just what they wanted. Remember what the teabaggers want. They want constitutional government. They want to idolize Ayn Rand. They want to run around the country saying, well, I pulled myself up by my own bootstraps. When's that term ever going to disappear? Who in the hell has ever seen bootstraps? I'll bet you the average person who uses that doesn't have a clue what a bootstrap is. Dumbasses. We got some James Carville in a minute here. Okay, last thing. Oh, the Obama administration's new national security strategy appears to be a formal break with the go-it-alone legacy of Bush. Calls for the U.S. to use its massive military power in concert with friends and allies. The Associated Press got a hold of a summary of the U.S. national security strategy. It also makes the safety of Americans the highest security priority and calls for the U.S. to bolster its power through diplomatic and development efforts. So that's different. Instead of bombing people into submission. The new strategy is expected to repudiate, at least implicitly, the 2002 national security strategy adopted by former President Bush. That document created the doctrine of U.S. unilateral action and preemptive wars that has taken the lives of thousands and thousands and thousands of people, Americans, Afghans, Iraqis, to satisfy the death wish of Dick Cheney and the childlike ego of George W. Bush. So this new policy, this new national military strategy will replace the toy soldier one that George W. Bush and Dick Cheney put together. I say toy soldier because that's how they looked at human lives, toy soldiers. They didn't care. These are two guys that between the two of them did everything they could. Between the two of them, what, they have 7 or 8 deferments to get out of military service until Bush figured out, hey, I'll just go join the Texas Air National Guard, get into a nice champagne unit, and I'll go to Alabama. We'll be back.
have to. It's more Mike Malone.
It's about 9 before the hour. All right. The Raging Cajun, James Carville, who, along with Paul Begala and Judas Stephanopoulos and a whole bunch of the boys, helped get Bill Clinton elected the first time. And Carville, of course, is married, God knows why, to Mary Madeline, who was an assistant to, or legal counsel to, Darth Cheney. What a marriage that must be. Have you ever been able to figure that out? Carville and Mary Madeline? Sex must be really, really good. Sex got to be just, I mean, somewhere out in around Neptune or someplace, right?
It'd have to be off the chart.
Off the chart, out of the almost out of the solar system.
Aren't there a couple other marriages like that?
No,
out there?
No. No, that's
There's
it.
There's no other right, left, extreme.
No, not
like
not
that.
Not like this.
I think about Maria Shriver and
Schwarzenegger.
Arnold.
Well, he's not a...
I'm going to pump you up now.
Right. He's not a conservative. He's not even a Republican. I don't know what the hell he is. Anyway, Carville, who worships at the altar of anything Democrat, he's a DLC Democrat, poor bastard. I like him when he's not talking about Democratic Party politics, because he's like a paleo Democrat. He still thinks for some reason that... all these ideas that worked 80 years ago will work now, which of course they won't. But I want you to listen while he blasts Obama and the Obama administration for ignoring the oil volcano disaster. He was on Good Morning America, was it, I think, this morning with Judas Stephanopoulos. Listen to this. Here's the first one. Maybe.
Last week. And James, let's begin with the oil spill. Last week, even though you're an ally of President Obama, you blasted the White House, said it was a lackadaisical response, that they were naive to be trusting BP, and you went on to say this is a disaster of the first magnitude. They've got to go to Plan B. Are we seeing Plan B now?
Man, I hope so, George, because the political stupidity of this is just unbelievable. Here you have a situation where you have some hardworking people blown up as a result of corporate malfeasance and maybe criminal negligence, as a result of inept bureaucrats who were part of the, you could even actually blame the previous administration for this, and the president doesn't get down here in the middle of this. This thing should be, his approval rating should be up 7 points right now if he'd have come down, and I have no idea of why they didn't seize this thing. I have no idea of why their attitude was so hands-off here. They need to launch a criminal investigation. The Attorney General needs to investigate criminal negligence on the part of BP and what went on at MMS. There's a thousand things that he could do. He just needs to get down here and start doing something. People are dying.
People are dying. All right. Here's Carville. The Raging Cajun. Here he is one more time.
The president is going down on Friday. He's announcing these tighter new regulations on Thursday. What more can the president do here?
He George, didn't...
Go ahead.
George, the president of the United States could have come down here. He could have been involved with the families of these 11 people. He could have commandeered the things that we could have sent the Woods Hole people. We could have sent the Scripps people. They don't have research vessels in the Gulf of Mexico. He could have demanded a plan in anticipation of this. You know, right, he can't exactly fill the hole up. The last night I was in Larry King with the CEO, of the former CEO of Shell. They said they got 85% of the stuff cleaned up in the Gulf of Saudi Arabia. He could be commandeering tankers and making BP bring tankers in and clean this up. They could be deploying people to the coast right now. He could be with the Corps of Engineers and the Coast Guard with these people in Plaquemines Parish doing something about these regulations. These people are crying. They're begging for something down here. And it just looks like he's not involved in this. Man, you got to get down here and take control of this. Put somebody in charge of this thing and get this thing moving. We're about to die down here.
Hmm. You know, you got to wonder, all you Republican jack-legged freaks that walk around dribbling your drool down your chin about Obama being a socialist, you got to wonder, or a Muslim, or whatever the hell your latest rant is from this crazed psychopath Glenn Beck, you got to wonder why the president Since he's such a socialist, you dumbasses, why hasn't he taken the offer from Iran? Why hasn't he taken the offer from Venezuela? Why hasn't he taken an offer from Cuba? All these countries that have offered to help. And Obama has done nothing. I mean, this really, he has really, really screwed up on this one. He really has. And in so many instances, a president of the United States, when these horrendous issues come at them head on, they collapse. They just fall apart at the seams. It's really sad to see. Yeah?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I couldn't think of what that reminded me of, that sound clip, when I heard it, just heard it a couple times. Do you remember the guy, the president of St. Bernard Parish after Katrina?
Yeah, the guy that broke down and cried.
Was crying on camera and said, send us some help, send us some food, send us something. Where is the help? I mean, that's just what it reminds me. I mean, the birds can't scream,
I know. And I don't get it. I would expect that Cheney and Bush would do nothing. I mean, that's how they're designed. That's how they were designed. But I would think that Obama might have at least a little bit of remembrance of his Democratic Party roots, which apparently he doesn't, and would respond differently from the way a capitalist corporatist would respond. And Dave in Wetumpka, Alabama says, Mike, I'm surprised that nobody has yet suggested that the oil geyser's effect on unemployment in the area could contribute to the next depression, just as the human-caused Dust Bowl contributed to the first one. Dave in Wetumpka, Alabama. We'll be right back. It is 7 past the hour on the Malloy program. John in Raleigh writes, Mike, if the Senate votes not to extend unemployment benefits this week, with Democrats going along with the Republicans on the no vote, we will have what I've been predicting for a few months, that the unemployed will be disappeared and forgotten, while the media will promote an all is well reality distortion field. I think it's safe to say that third world countries do this all the time. But for the U.S. to walk away from its people is truly an amazing event. Yeah, we're getting, never get used to it, but it's becoming a very familiar feeling, isn't it? To the mine disaster. This is from Mason at Fire Dog Lake. A series of explosions appears to have collapsed the seafloor and blown up the BOP. What is that? The the big three-story thing at the wellhead. Oil and gas are billowing out of a depression in the seafloor, where the BOP used to be at an exponentially greater rate than anything seen before. My theory, the well consisted of the casing with the drill pipe inside it, the sand and rocks that turned the gusher into a giant sandblaster that blew out holes in the riser pipe at the kinks, was coming from the walls of the well that the cement between the casing and the wall was supposed to protect. Therefore, the hole has been getting bigger and bigger, and now it's like a volcano vent with the piping inside it, probably a twisted mess. The relief wells can't possibly stop this because, if anything, they add, because anything they add will just be blown out of the volcano. I don't know. Company executives and top drill hands on the Deepwater Horizon drilling rig argued for hours about how to proceed before a BP official made the decision to remove heavy drilling fluid from the well and replace it with lighter weight seawater that was unable to prevent gas from surging to the surface and exploding. Oh, and by the way, the BOP is the blowout protector. This was testimony today. One employee was so mad. The rig's chief mechanic, Doug Brown, testified that he warned that they'd be relying on the rig's blowout preventer if they proceeded the way BP wanted. Brown said of Jimmy Harrell, the top Transocean official on the rig, he pretty much grumbled, "Well, I guess that's what we have those pinchers for." The pinchers was likely a reference to the shear rams in the blowout preventer, the final means of stopping an explosion. Brown said in sworn testimony today that the BP official stood up during the meeting and said, "This is how it's going to be." So as a result of that, and apparently there was a little bit more to that meeting. There are reports circulating that some of the rig workers actually got into confrontation, I mean physical confrontation, with some of the BP or Deepwater Horizon people moments before this thing exploded and people were murdered by British Petroleum. Oh, man. According to Doug Simpson, a news writer for AOL, BP began its unprecedented effort to plug this blowout in the Gulf. Earlier today, the company's chief said tonight that the procedure was going, quote, according to plan, end quote. The BP official said it could take 2 days to find out whether the operation, which has never been attempted so far underwater, is successful. I'll tell you what let's do. Kathy, if you don't mind opening the lines, I've been going on all week, and I'd like to hear what you have to say about this. The number here is 877-996-2556. So if you want to check in tonight. Oh yeah, the one of the senators from Alaska, Lisa Murkowski, is getting pretty sneaky. She has a plan to cap liability at $75 million. The actual cost of cleanup at this point is $649 million and going up daily. But the way this is reported, as the Deepwater Horizon drilling rig continues to spill over 1 million gallons of oil into the Gulf every day, Republicans are demanding less regulation for companies like BP and Transocean, while also looking for a taxpayer-funded bailout of BP. These sons of bitches, isn't this just so, I mean, it's just so typically Republican. After a month of oil spewing into the Gulf, the cost of cleaning up BP's mess is over $500 million and counting. But a group of Republican senators led by Lisa Murkowski of Alaska wants the company to only pay for about the first 5 days of the cleanup and put taxpayers on the hook for everyone else. It's a straight-up bailout for BP, and it's outrageous. I believe there are a couple of websites out there who that are taking signatures to petition a petition to tell this crazy broad and her crazy, freakish, studly friends to back off. Of course, of course. Meanwhile, Charlie writes, I just wanted to update you on the Greenpeace thing you covered last week. The seven Greenpeace activists charged with felony interference with critical infrastructure after scrawling anti-drilling messages on a Shell oil vessel may face new charges. The New Orleans Joint Terrorism Task Force is looking into adding additional charges against the seven who scrawled messages intended for Ken Salazar while he was in the area touring the devastation. As you probably know, the messages asked him to ban offshore drilling, and another message said, Arctic next? I dare to sound naive, Charlie writes, when I ask this, but aren't our coastlines, coral reefs, waterways, ecosystems, and food supply critical infrastructure? Is an assault on our water supply, business ventures, and ecosystems not an act of terrorism or critical to national security? Not a single mention of criminal or civil penalties against BP? But the seven Greenpeace activists are facing, I think I read someplace today, they're facing up to 15 years in prison for this. Charlie writes, such obvious attacks on civil disobedience, he's referring to these seven Greenpeace people being busted, on civil disobedience and liberty cannot go unanswered. They want us to shut up. I, for one, refuse to be intimidated. And the there's a link to Green blog at the New York Times. I'll share that with you when we come back, and then we're going to take some phone calls. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
They chained my mind to an endless tomb when they took my only son from me. I know it's true, oh so true, 'cause I saw it on TV. I know it's true.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. So Charlie in Atlanta sent this in to me about the seven Greenpeace activists who scrawled messages on a Shell oil vessel. There's consideration now that they'll be charged with acts of terror. Remember those laws that were passed during the Bush years? They can be used now to they can be used against I'm getting confused here because I'm hearing music in my headphones. There, it stopped. Thank you. Appreciate it. Those laws that were passed during the Bush years where union members who went out on a strike could be charged with acts of terror. Certainly Greenpeace demonstrators who involved themselves in civil disobedience, like painting something on the side of a Shell tanker. Shell has no problem traveling around the world causing death and destruction. God forbid that a Greenpeace member should scrawl something on the side of their filthy goddamn boat. Excuse me. Anyway, New York Times Green Blog says charges have been filed against seven members of Greenpeace who boarded an offshore drilling support ship in Louisiana and painted anti-drilling slogans in crude oil. They painted it in oil, okay? On the vessel's side, 2 days ago, Monday. The ship is docked in a port, Fourchon, Louisiana, an area affected by the BP oil spill in the Gulf, and is to sail to the Arctic this summer to support Royal Dutch Shell's company, company's exploratory drilling plans there. Greenpeace activists rappelled down the side and painted the phrase Arctic Next on the vessel. They also lowered a sign saying, Salazar, ban Arctic drilling, before being seized by the port police. The activists were charged with unauthorized entry of, quote, critical infrastructure, end quote, and of an inhabited dwelling, according to the LaForche Parish Sheriff's Department. Both counts carry a maximum penalty of 6 years in prison. They were released on bail yesterday morning. However, the New Orleans Joint Terrorism Task Force is looking into the matter, so says the spokeswoman for the LaForche Parish Sheriff's Office. So these seven Greenpeace activists could face terrorism-related charges. I'll tell you, if that happens, I'm afraid that's going to be possibly the final straw for me. These corporate predators might decide that the best thing to do with the seven Greenpeace activists is to drop the charges and just leave them alone. Bruce writes, an AP photographer was showing pictures of the devastation on PBS and described a large bird at the well site. It was in the middle of the oil slick and completely enveloped in thick tar. The bird was up against the hull of one of the work boats. It was constantly pecking the steel plating. The photographer thought he was trying to get in. In fact, it was defiantly fighting the monster that was killing it. The photographer took pictures until it disappeared. Yeah. Took pictures until it disappeared. I know. It's just a bird. And 11 people were murdered on that drilling platform by BP. And the head of BP just strolls along the beach today on ABC's Good Morning America, talking about how devastated he was to see all the damage and how BP is going to make everything right. And BP won't stop until the everything is returned to its pre-disaster status. And you sit there and you think, well, you son of a bitch, what are you going to do, reanimate the 11 dead people? Are you going to somehow come up with a technology? You can't even stop this damn thing. And you're going to come up with a technology that's going to clean out the marshes, going to do something that is physically impossible. But there he was, the CEO of BP, walking up and down the beach on one of the barrier islands off the coast of Louisiana, talking about, oh, okay, we're going to take care of everything. You pig bastard, you already have.
Okay, streets are safe now. All your pretty white children can come out and see Spider-Man. And they came out of their houses and they looked around, but they didn't see no one in my country. 'Tis of day to take swings at each other on talk show TV. Why don't you just go ahead?
And if he don't like me, he don't understand. He's a drugstore.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. As promised, let's go to the phones for a while. Ann is in Madison, Wisconsin, listening on 92.1 The Mic. Hey, Ann.
Oh, Mike, you know, the first time I listened to you, started listening to you, Molly was a newborn. My God, look at where we are today.
Yeah, isn't it wonderful?
I was telling Kathy that I was listening to Democracy Now, and Amy Goodman asked the question, why doesn't the federal government come in and just take over this operation? And the answer was a CYA answer for the Obama administration. And then I listened to Keith Olbermann this evening, and a marine biologist said he didn't have a great deal of confidence in this latest move, felt that possibly a third relief well, which all takes time, might relieve the pressure. But it just hit me that there isn't a solution to this problem.
I know. That's something we've I've kind of danced around over the past few nights, or the past, I don't know how long we've been covering this, but yeah, what if there isn't one?
And it just seems to me that that answer, that there isn't a solution, is starting to loom so large that what about this fellow Paul Newell, who said that the pressure beneath the sea floor could blow any of this cementing action straight out of the water?
Sure.
Yellowstone caldera. I mean, you know, I'm a parent too. I just had this sense this evening that all of these things that are being attempted are just for show, that the administration and BP probably knew weeks ago that anything that they did was not going to succeed. And I hate to feel that way. The marine biologist on Keith Olbermann said, well, there's hope if a third relief well is drilled. So I guess that's the hope that we have. That it isn't just going to explode.
I guess it gets down to that. Nobody has any answers at all. Not BP, not their scientists, not their engineers, not the Obama administration, not the Department of Interior. Nobody has any ideas, any solutions, any plausible explanations. And I think this is what Greenpeace and other environmental organizations have been talking about for 2, 3, 4, 5 decades. And that is simply this. Some of these operations are so dangerous and so risky, you can do 150 of them and never have an accident, and the 151st can cause a disaster of such monumental proportions that it negates completely the fact that the other 150 didn't cause any problems. I think another reality here is what some of us may be learning is that these undersea operations are not, they're not leak proof. They leak all the time. They just don't gush like this. It's these undersea operations where we have invaded a space that we have no business being in to extract oil, for God's sake, punching holes in the bottom of the ocean it makes absolutely no sense at all, unless you are trying to find a fuel source that will satisfy people on this planet, the corporations who are beyond greed, and then citizens, including us Americans, who couldn't care less about the damage that we're doing. I mean, who really cares about this stuff? So the problem that you're talking about, I think any possibility is a possibility. Anything. The whole thing could blow. Nobody knows.
Well, Noam Chomsky was here in Madison towards the end of March. And what that clip that you repeated, that you aired of the Joe Stack portion of his talk, also included something that he said about corporations. It is in their charter that they must return a profit to their shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
It is illegal not to, which means that this event in the Gulf is a game changer. It means that we have to look at how corporations are chartered. And of course, Amy Goodman's question was, what are the criminal liabilities for the BP executives?
Mm.
That's another issue. If they're persons, maybe they should be persons to the full extent of the law.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I'm really pissed. I don't know. Any system, political, economic, that accepts as a ground the depraved indifference to human life,
mm-hmm,
is just over. It is over now with this event. Thank you for letting me vent.
All right, Ann, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Mm. You know, I thought the days of one thing after another ended with the death of the Cheney-Bush administration, but apparently it has not. Reg writes in, if Obama does take over, like he took over the war in Afghanistan, he will own this catastrophe. No one knows how to stop the oil from gushing. Another well will take months. And all that will be remembered and used by the Republicans will be that it would be Obama's failure. Of course, because Republicans hate this country. They hate America. They will do anything to destroy us and replace us with a form of corporate fascism that makes them happy. They are bastards. So for Barack Obama, no exit. If we had a political system, if we had a political party, the Republicans, who cared anything about the United States, by that I mean the people of the United States, our institutions, the things that we have sent people off to wars to ostensibly to die for. Republicans are cowards, liars, and bastards of the highest order. If they cared the least, they would remove themselves from the politics of this horror and try to help, but they don't care. In fact, the Republicans, John Boehner and the rest of these bastards, they want this gusher to continue. They want it to continue. They want it to destroy. They want it to eat away the economic foundation of that part of the country. And you know why? In addition to the fact that they hate America and they hate American, the American worker, they want it to happen so they can use it in their political ads next year in the run-up for the 2012 election. That's all they care about. That's all these fascist bastards care about. And Barack Obama, being the president of the United States and representing certain corporate interests above and beyond, way above and beyond the American people, only not to the murderous toxic level yet of the Republicans. Barack Obama wants to make sure, as Reg points out, that this is not used against him when he runs for re-election. And as Ann said, this is a cover-your-ass operation by everybody involved. So here we sit with the worst environmental disaster in modern history. Can you think of one worse? I know the pigs at Fox don't have television don't even cover it anymore, do they? Did you know that, Kathy? And this filthy, putrid drug addict, Rush Limbaugh, and this suicide-prone psychopath, Glenn Beck, and this idiot, Hannity. What are they telling their brain-dead listeners, huh? What are they? That it's Obama's fault. It's Obama's fault that 8 years of Bush-Cheney utterly and absolutely destroyed the one slight check on predatory capitalism, which is all capitalism. And that was the regulatory systems that were in place in this country. Well, you never know. It may be time to respond with more than talk. You know what I'm saying? We'll be right back. Frank here. I'm like just wondering about the after effects of a hurricane, especially in Florida. Wouldn't the endless bands of heavy rain soak all the coastlines affected along with all of Florida and destroy the drinking water supply? Also, with this oily mix never just drying up naturally, wouldn't it be nearly impossible to ever turn the electricity on again? Every transformer and power line and connection box will be soaked, ruined. And when energized, the current will through the never-drying-up oil to everything it touches. I'm not sure what you mean there, Frank. Perhaps somebody has an answer. Well, I might, Frank, if I knew what you were asking, but I get the point. A couple of people have mentioned the devastation on top of devastation that a hurricane would produce. Andy is in Ripon, Wisconsin. Hey, Andy.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Not so good. How are you?
not so good either. I was watching Dylan Radigan today, and he had a couple of guys on there, an oil industry expert and a another guy that was the chairman of WOW Energy Solutions, and they were talking about the oil spill, and they both came to the conclusion that the volume of oil coming out of that televised pipe is not enough to cause the damage that's occurring right now. and they said that it's a real brown, sludgy oil slick that's that's getting to the coast now. And they said that doesn't have the same consistency. And they had a research vessel out there last week, and they were 6 miles away from the televised pipe,
mm-hmm.
and they said that there was a huge oil plume right there, and they actually were taking films of the bottom of the ocean, and there was a big, and they said it was a big sludgy, terrible goo on the ocean floor,
mm-hmm.
and they said that they believe that the well casing or the well head has been fractured.
Yeah, right.
And they said if that has happened, then it's going to be, it's even much, much, much worse than it is now. And they said that it's the only thing they can do is let it run. And I think that's why Obama and, these guys are not in a hurry, because they really know what's going on,
Sad is, I know what you mean. Sad doesn't quite capture it. I just wonder, though, and I hate to devil's advocate anything about this issue, but how does the person know by looking at that video feed? I mean, what's the relation between that video feed and the oil that's on the surface? I mean, this thing's been gushing for what? We're into six weeks now.
Yeah. Well, they said that the in diameter of that pipe is 22 inches. And he said when he was watching the video, he saw a fish swim right through the stream,
mm-hmm.
of stuff coming out, and it just came out the other side, and it was like gray. And he said, this is not the same consistency of that brown slug that's washing up.
Huh.
And he said, there's no way that pipe could pump that much oil out. So he thinks that
something's been fractured and it's just not on the camera.
Yeah, the camera's on a whole different.
Yeah.
This well head is 6 miles away. So they're filming just this one leak, but that's not the main leak. He called it the elephant behind the mouth, has not showed itself.
Now, where was this? Where did this interview or discussion take place?
It was on Dylan Radigan.
Oh, that's right, on MSNBC. Okay.
Yeah, the guy's name was the oil industry expert was Matt Simmons,
mm-hmm.
and then Nicholas Totsky was the chairman of Wow Energy Solutions, and they, they've been around the business for years,
right?
They just had a look of gloom on their faces, and they just said it would, you could just tell that they know it's a fractured wellhead, and then if that's the case, they said it's we're in serious trouble. So
deep. Go ahead.
I tended to believe him just by, what I was hearing. And mm-hmm. he was shocked. He said, "Are you saying that there is a are you saying there is a second leak?" And they both said, "Yes."
Yeah. All right, Andy, thanks. Boy, you've brightened up my evening.
Well, I thought this would do it for
you. No, I hear you, pal. Thanks a lot. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate what you had to say, Andy. Take care. All right. We'll be back after this break and take your phone calls. One open line, the number is 877-996-2556. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. You're listening to the Molloy program and watching it if you're on Ustream. Bruce writes in, Prairie 2 writes in, gushers, like the one in the Gulf, are driven by the natural gas at the top of the dome formation they have drilled into. The good news is that there is lots of natural gas coming up with the oil, which means the well pipe isn't deep into the oil because it would run oil until the gas pushed down to the pipe end. They're probably only pumping mud now after this long because the pressure is letting up enough to allow it. They will take credit for capping the runaway well that they let run out. They could have been pumping mud within a couple of days at most. The equipment was available on any of the other deep rigs, but they must have determined the well was either too damaged or too poorly built for that to work. I'm sorry, Prairie 2, I've lost the good news in there. Where's the good news? And regarding the person who wrote about the terrible consequences of a tornado or a hurricane picking up oil and the, what did he write? Have I still got that here? Yeah, this is, Frank. Wouldn't it be nearly impossible to ever turn the electricity on again with the oil on everything? And Michael writes, no. On the electrical systems, oil is an insulator. If it's contaminated with water, that's a problem. But if the electrical equipment is sealed against water, oil, contaminated or otherwise, none of that's going to get in. Most transformers, for example, are filled with oil to insulate the windings and conduct heat away. Remember, for example, all the flap about transformers containing PCB-based oils, which were contaminating water supplies due to improper disposal. Well, there you go, Frank. That's just one thing that you don't have to worry about. Ah, Lord. Before we go back to your call, this is your calls. This was on the CNN wire 5 days ago. And I missed it. The damaging effects of this massive oil eruption in the Gulf of Mexico will be felt all the way to Europe and the Arctic, a top scientist told a congressional panel last Friday. This is not just a regional issue for the wildlife, said Carl Safina, the president of the Blue Ocean Institute. Safina, who recently returned from the Gulf Coast region, presented several photographs, including one of an oil-covered bird. He said, noting common migratory patterns, there will be a nest empty in Newfoundland. Safina warned that multiple forms of marine life in the Atlantic Ocean come into the Gulf to breed. Safina's briefing to representatives of the House Energy and Commerce Committee was part of an ongoing effort to draw a broad range of expertise for cleanup efforts. So the effects, not just the wildlife, the effects are expected, is that the right word, to reach Newfoundland, Europe, Jesus. All right, back to your calls. Brenda is in California. Hey, Brenda.
Hey, hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. I hear a really bad echo.
We don't hear it here.
Okay. Anyways, I was telling Kathy that the reason I called is because I can't help remembering when you read back the Hopi prophecy from... Oh, I think her name was Kim, and talking about the different things that would happen over time and how they'd all been fulfilled. And the last one was the, I believe it was the last one, was the she's turning black. And I don't know. It just, you know, when you said it, when you read it that night, and everything that come to pass now, it just, you know, you feel it in your heart. You feel it in, throughout your body. You just feel this overwhelming sadness and heartbreak and helplessness. And, you know, I can hear it in your voice. I hear the frustration and, you know, I know I'm feeling it. I know other people I talk to are feeling it. And it just seems, I don't know, you know, what you were just saying about maybe the reason their response is so lacking is because they already know that it's, you know, it's way more than, you know, what, you know, what we're being shown and everything. And
well, I think that's true to a certain extent, Brenda, and I'm certainly not defending any corporate predator. It's true to a certain extent, but I think the reason they being BP, I don't think they consider this to be an extinction level event. I think the reason they're not showing the horror that's going on a mile down on the floor of the Gulf is because they are liable for lawsuits, and they're you know, from the moment this happened, they've been playing cover their own asses. This should eliminate BP as a corporate entity. I mean, this company should be, first of all, it should be seized by the U.S. government, but that's not going to happen because Obama is afraid of his corporate sponsors. But BP should never be allowed to get a permit ever again in the history of the human race. They should be just turned into an invisible former company and gone, and only entered into the history books as the company that created the worst man-made disaster in recent history, if not global history. So because we're talking man-made disaster here. So I don't know how much of what we're seeing is deliberately being withheld from us because it's an extinction level event, or how much is being deliberately withheld from us because of the lawsuits. I agree with you that we're probably seeing exactly what they want us to see, but I wonder what their motivation is. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. I just in context of how things have operated as far as our capitalistic society over the last several decades, and instead of, I don't know. I guess I'm definitely a liberal. I'm definitely, or have been in the past, an idealist. But the things that I've seen gone on in the last, you know, oh, gosh, pretty much, well, I was a young person when Reagan was president, but I started getting politically interested during that time because of the things I saw going on. And I just think that, I don't know. It just...
I know, it's very...
We're worse and we're worse, and we're not doing anything. We're like, as a people, we seem to be paralyzed.
Yeah.
We can't identify somebody we can put forward and vote for that's not corrupted, or doesn't get corrupted, or doesn't get the finger, you know, get taken into the room and had the little talk to by...
Right.
Whatever that is that makes them all of a sudden walk out of that room and start doing their duties and behaving totally different. And... we go, oh, well, you know, there's another corrupt one, and we try and find another one, and, you know, we elect our senators or whatever, and everybody goes there, and something changes them, something happens to them, I don't know what it is, and we're unable to do anything about it.
Yeah, I hear you, and I think what it is, Brenda, as you point out, I think it's fear, I really do. We got a break here. Thanks, Brenda. Thanks for checking in.
Yesterday, suddenly, there's a shadow hanging over me. I'm not half the man I used to be.
had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. You know, we talk a lot on this program about these lying SOBs on right-wing talk radio. They're all liars. They're all hypocrites. And some of them are so bad, they even make Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh look like, be careful here, look like they occasionally tell the truth. One of the worst is this pig, Mike Savage, who is based out of San Francisco. He, on his program the other day, he said that President Obama is not going to go to Arlington National Cemetery on Monday to lay a wreath, but is sending Joe Biden in his place. Michael Wiener, Savage, stated that this is the first time in history that a president has not laid a wreath at Arlington on Memorial Day. That is a complete filthy lie. But this is what, you know, I'm sure that everybody listened to Michael Savage the day this pig said this. You know, the idiots that listened to his program probably walked away from the program saying to themselves, oh, yeah, well, goddamn Obama's not gonna lay a wreath. All right, here's the truth. On several occasions in just the last 30 years, U.S. presidents have been elsewhere on Memorial Day, either vacationing or attending to other presidential duties, while other administration officials represented them at the wreath-laying ceremony. In 2002, George W. Bush was in France on Memorial Day. In his place, Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz laid a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknowns. Didn't even go to Arlington to begin with. Paul Wolfowitz, is there irony's dead, but Wolfowitz, the architect of murder and mayhem, lays a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknowns. President George Herbert Walker Bush, George's pappy, attended no ceremonies at Arlington National Cemetery during his 4 years in office. Not once. In 1989, he was in Rome. From 1990 through 1992, who spent the Memorial Day weekend vacationing in Kennebunkport, Maine, while Dan Quayle laid a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknowns. He didn't go to Arlington either. Ronald Reagan. See, this is why Savage is such a pig bastard and should be taken off the air. He is a lying SOB, as they all are, but they come up with this stuff. And their stupid listeners buy it. Reagan was away from Arlington on Memorial Day 4 times during his 8 years in office. In 1981, he spent the day at his ranch in Santa Barbara, California, while George Herbert Walker Bush, the vice president, laid the wreath at Arlington. In 1983, he was in Williamsburg, Virginia. In 1987, he spent Memorial Day at Camp David. And in 1988 on Memorial Day, he was attending a summit meeting in Moscow. Now, Bill Clinton has no entry in this list because he attended Memorial Day ceremonies at Arlington every year during his 8 years in office. Now, on this Memorial Day Monday, Obama is scheduled to honor America's fallen heroes with a speech at Abraham Lincoln National Cemetery in Chicago, while Vice President Joe Biden takes his place at Arlington. So just another example. And you people listening in San Francisco, I mean, you ought to call this filthy pig coward Michael Wiener Savage. You ought to call him up and just say, how can you lie like this? How can you lie like this, you filthy moron? Michael Wiener Savage, a true right-wing Republican. He wouldn't know the truth if it came up and bit him on his well-padded ass. But this is the kind of stuff they pump out into the public. This is what they do. This is what all of them do. But Savage is especially egregious because, you know, he's another one like Neil Bortz. Always wanted to be at the top of the heap, and vermin like Savage, who don't have the talent, and neither does Bortz, the talent to climb up, and I use talent with quotes around it, they don't have the talent to climb up this heap of filth and lies that they help put out there. The kind of talent that a drug addict like Rush Limbaugh has, or the kind of talent like a potential suicide Glenn Beck has. You know, Savage is just a weasel. What's his name? Neil Bortz is just a freak who doesn't like black people. Anyway, Michael Savage, you're a lying SOB and you know it, you scum sucker. Why don't you go back to selling Watkins products door to door where you belong? I mean, even every time I see his picture, I just get Michael Wiener Savage's picture. I just get creepy, crawly feelings. Like, where did this freak come from? And why is he out there saying stuff that not only shows his ignorance, but also shows his contempt? Savage doesn't like black people either. I mean, none of these right-wingers do. They look at Barack Obama. That's what they all mean when they say, we want our country back. Right. They want to go back in the hands of a white man. Michael Savage, you're a jerk. We'll be right back.
Under my control. I don't need security. I've got a Colt 45 in here with me. I'll scare off intruders in my fatigues, black jackets, and army boots. My neck is red, my collar blue. I like it that way.
Listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
25 before the hour. A couple emails and back to your calls here. Regarding Memorial Day, as Irish Dave writes in, Reagan had the best excuse. Four absences from Arlington are balanced by the fact that he laid a wreath at Bitburg, the SS Nazi cemetery, on Nazi Memorial Day. Or as he proclaimed on that auspicious occasion, Ich bin ein Bitburger. Well, he didn't say that, but. So somebody call Michael Savage, and after you tell him what a lying bastard he is, point out to him that his favorite, Richard Nixon, laid a grave, or laid a wreath, and Savage must know this since he's Jewish, but he laid a wreath at the memorial to the SS that was responsible for annihilating 6 million Jews. But none of that makes difference, any difference at all, to a pig like Michael Savage. Tom in Joshua Tree, California writes, my question, since corporations have all the rights of citizens when it comes to flooding the airwaves with their civil liberties, where's the cry for their civil responsibilities now that they have flooded the oceans and waterways of the country for centuries to come? The country that gives them their rights as the good citizens they are. It's those Greenpeace liberals that are causing all the trouble. And Mike in Guerneville, California writes, I actually took a lot of preparation to get ready for the top kill. I've been watching the robots work at it for days. Fascinating to watch if it wasn't so tragic. One of the engineers on the top kill rig was tweeting last night before his bosses told him to shut up. These guys are doing their best to shut the thing down. This was very evident from his tweets. I'm very hopeful that they will succeed. I'm no fan of BP, but they are surely trying to cover their butts. But they want this to stop ASAP. CNN has the best live cam views. There's six different cameras. There's also some very informed commentary going on at theoildrum.com. Theoildrum.com. The site is populated with oil rig workers and engineers. You can get a lot of good up-to-date info there without having to rely on BP spokesliars. So those of you who take these websites down, The Oil Drum, T-H-E-O-I-L-D-R-U-M, TheOilDrum.com. And from Charlie, remember Russell Honoré? He was the general, the army general who was in charge the horror that was Katrina. He was blogging for CNN, and he said Obama, the Obama White House, should do the following. First, punish BP. The first rule when dealing with disasters is to figure out which rules you need to break. Rules are designed for when everything is working. A democracy is based on trust. BP has proved it can't be trusted. The government should immediately freeze BP's assets and start to charge this corporation $100 million each day the oil flows. The money would be held in a fund the U.S. government draws on to take care of the people along the Gulf Coast and pay the states for doing the cleanup. Next, BP and the government bureaucrats who broke a law and put the public at risk need to go to jail. Punitive action must start immediately, with BP supplying the money from fines to help the Gulf Coast get over this catastrophe. This disaster is the BP oil spill, not the Gulf oil spill. By the way, the local insult in Louisiana is now BPU, Charlie. Yeah, see, I don't understand why there is any hesitation on the part of Eric Holder, head of the Justice Department, to arrest these bastards. And Bruce Enberg writes, natural gas is a relatively benign pollutant, relatively benign with quotes around it. Its presence indicates they won't have to wait until this extremely large formation empties of oil before capping. This is possible now. And he adds, since Bush established common law that the U.S. can, quote, declare war, end quote, on non-state actors that do the U.S. economic damage, and the president is above all law in the prosecution of said war, quote, quote, why hasn't Obama, who has not repudiated this doctrine, why hasn't he fired up the Predator drones? Now, that's a good idea. Yeah, why hasn't he? Oh, that's right. These are corporations. This is not civilians in Afghanistan, right, Mr. President? It's okay to kill civilians in Afghanistan. Well, not okay, but, you know, it's collateral damage. Jesus God, we have a war going on, right? We're fighting for peace, freedom, and justice for the Afghan tribesmen. God knows they've been looking for it for the past 6,000 years, right? Ah, Mark is in San Francisco. Sorry to keep you waiting so long, Mark.
Oh, thank you very much. I feel privileged.
Well, okay.
I actually have developed what I think is an idea, I'm not an engineer, of a possibility of how to seal this leak or several.
Okay.
And I'm going to put it as quickly as I can.
Okay.
What you need is a giant elongated balloon that's a donut balloon. And in the middle of it, you have a pipe. And you put that in, from what I gather, and you can do it with various holes, or if you want to go down to the main hole, you can do it with various. I think I'm just going to use the thing of what I actually did see with the pipe.
Okay.
And that is, you can crawl one of those little robots into that 5-foot pipe. That's what I heard on the news.
Mm-hmm.
And it has probably a flexible pipe, and it might have in it, if you need to, like what I had to recently have in my heart, a stent.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that it will not collapse, but I don't think it will. And you get that deep in there, and then that collapsed balloon, you blow it up.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing why you have the pipe in the middle and so forth, you're taking off an amazing amount of pressure. You're able to direct it up to some collecting point on the surface. And it won't, and most likely it will not be, depending on what you have to do here, so much pressure that it will destroy that balloon. Now, we make very, very tough synthetic materials, ironically, probably out of petroleum nowadays. And I think that can work. If that's a 5-foot pipe, and just think in those terms, right? Expand it to anything else. And you want to put in there a 3 or 4 foot pipe, which is surrounded by an elongated donut balloon.
Okay, I'll tell you what.
Seal.
All right, I'll tell you what.
What do you think?
Well, like you, I'm not an engineer. To me, it sounds a little out there. But I've got two or three listeners who are pretty hip about this stuff, and I'll leave it up to them to send me an email and let me know how your idea might play from the standpoint of the laws of physics. All right, Mark, and if they come in tonight, I'll read them on the air. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate you checking in. Tom's in Orlando. Hey, Tom.
Hi, Mike. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure, sure.
One little quick remark that I you might know it, but Race's Big Winners, PhD, is as real as O'Reilly's Peabody or Combat Experience. And he keeps repeating it, and it's a total lie.
Right. See? Right.
But the reason I called was I'd like to ask your opinion about the Bilderberg group, because I was taking this with the grain of salt for years, but after 9/11 everything is possible, and right now it starts making more sense. And there is a guy of the name Daniel Estulin.
Well, Tom, let me stop you. I appreciate the question, I really do. I don't know that much about them, this group, and certainly not any names. It seems pretty far afield from what we're talking about tonight, but I'll tell you what, maybe, you know, if you have a name like that or a link that you'd like me to check out, email it to me. But it's just so far off what we're talking about tonight, and I just don't know that much about it. You know, I read stuff and about the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderbergers and you know, all these groups, and I don't know if it's true or not. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if it is true, Tom. I got to move on. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Jerry's in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Jerry.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right.
Thanks for listening to me. I just have a couple comments, and
okay.
Then I'm going to hang up and listen to you. First of all, I don't think President Obama has recognized the 11 people that was killed. I think he should do something like a memorial or lay a wreath like that.
I think that's planned for early next week. I'm pretty sure I heard something today, yeah.
Oh, I see. And then I do think that we need big government. At a time like this, the government should take over.
Absolutely.
Get BP out of there, make them pay billions of dollars and the cleanup, and then pay those poor people that are losing their livelihood. Now, it was only about 4 or 5 weeks ago, all you could hear about big government, we're tired of big government. And Bobby Gentle comes up the other day, and he's the one that didn't want to take the stimulus package, and he was talking about he didn't like big government, but yet he was yelling and screaming for Obama.
Oh, yeah, once,
you know,
these guys all remind me of people who, you know, live in a house someplace, and every time a fire truck goes by, they laugh and give the fireman a finger. And then all of a sudden their house is on fire, and who do they scream for? Hey, thanks, Jerry. I got to move on. Appreciate it. Before the hour, I haven't seen any updates about how this top kill, so-called, is going. other than Top Kill underway in the Gulf. The live feed that we've been watching, that you can find at MikeMalloy.com, and the live feed on CNN, same thing. Although CNN has multiple screens. But everything still looks to be pretty much the same, except the black gushing has been replaced with a sand-colored gushing. And I don't know. Is that good? A couple of our more astute listeners have suggested it is good. But, I don't know. I guess we'll just have to wait. All right, from Bruce, the heart stent approach. That's what our caller, a couple calls back, said. And Prairie 2 writes, the heart stent approach is basically what they have been doing with the tap they put in the crack in the pipe already. The problem is they're basically dealing with a crushed beer can with a lot of pressure in it. Screwing with it is only likely to make it worse. The pipe is 21 inches and not 5 feet across, as earlier reported. On the surface, they use shaped charges to cut the pipe and drop a valve over it, clamp it, and shut the valve. That's on the surface. They're considering doing this if the BOP should rupture while pumping mud, but a casing blowout is a possibility. This happened to Pemex, the Mexican oil company, in the 70s, and oil ran out from multiple tracks in the ground for months. But that was a much smaller formation. Well, has this affected your dreaming yet? It has mine. Maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's because we focus on this so intensely 3 hours a night after absorbing bits and pieces of it on newscast during the day. But I've noticed maybe three or four nights over the last 2, maybe 3 weeks, I've had these dreams, which is clearly indicates to me it's penetrated into my subconscious. No, I don't know what dreams are all about. I really don't. But the awareness of this disaster has gotten someplace into something other than my awake conscious state. And that really bugs me because, I really like sleeping. I really, really do. And when I wake up at 2:30 or 4:30 in the morning or whatever, and I've been having this dream about something related to things in the water that, and no, it's not a sex dream, but things in the water that are swirling and it's going to be horrible and it's ill-defined in the dream or not defined at all. I don't put a lot of credence on any kind of dream interpretation or any of that crap. I just think it's random firings of your synapses when you go to sleep. I don't think anybody knows really what dreaming is all about, but to ascribe to dreaming some mystical, magical thing to me is hogsnot. To me, dreaming is little bits and snatches of stuff that are still floating around inside your mind when you go to sleep and filters into perhaps into your unconscious and resurfaces when you're asleep and vulnerable. Yeah, like a vampire coming up next to your bed, right? But I just wonder, like people who had horrific anxiety dreams after the attack on September 11th, 2001, that was allowed to happen by the Bush administration. And it was proof that with the wrong gang in charge of our government, we were vulnerable to anything. And I think that caused a lot of people to, if I remember reading, a lot of people were having these acute anxiety dreams because of what the Bush crime family and Dick Cheney and the rest of these neocon right-wing bastards allowed to happen. But the BP spill, in the sense of lasting environmental damage, not the human life that suffered as a result of the Cheney Bush engineered 9/11 attack. Thousands of people died in that, and the ripple effect through those families is just incalculable. But in terms of environmental damage, ecological damage, obviously what happened is happening in the Gulf of Mexico has incredibly greater far-reaching effects on everything in this country. So I guess that would explain why the dreams. If you have been having nightmares about this without giving me any details, I'd love to hear from you. All right, I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Please keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.